On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Sheehan, Mr. Curtis Franklin back on the show, and I'm back from vacation. Now, we have an info-packed show today. That's right. Curtis is going to take us through some of the learnings and some of the trends he's seeing at Black Hat and DEF CON. Plus, if you're using an older programming language on your applications, you need to continue to maintain them. Maybe it's time to get off of them and use some modern transpilation and AI techniques that IBM has. Plus, with the proliferation of AI usage in the market, today we have Michael Amore, CEO of Virtualytics, and he's going to talk about how AI is actually impacting data access and analytics for your organizations. You definitely shouldn't miss it. Twyatt on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 558, recorded August 25th, 2023. You got your AI in my enterprise. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Miro. Miro is your team's online workspace to connect, collaborate, and create together. Tap into a way to map processes, systems, and plans with the whole team. Get your first three boards for free to start creating your best work yet at Miro.com/podcast. And by Collide. Collide is a device trust solution for companies with Okta, and they ensure if a device isn't trusted and secure, it can't log into your cloud apps. Visit Collide.com/Twyatt to book an on-demand demo today. And by Panoptica. Reduce the complexities of protecting your workloads and applications in a multi-cloud environment. Panoptica provides comprehensive cloud workload protection and integrated with API security protect the entire application lifecycle. Learn more about Panoptica at panoptica.app. Welcome to Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in some experts and some guides. Starting with the very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's principal analyst at Omdia. Curtis, it's always great to have you back on. What's going on for you this week? What's keeping you busy?
Well, it's been a busy week for me doing a lot of writing. I've got a report that is going to be due into editorial at the end of next week, coming out for our subscribers early in September. This one is on the cyber insurance market. Still doing follow-up from Black Hat and DEF CON. A lot of that going on. And, oh, by the way, I was participating in a webinar on Wednesday about generative AI in the enterprise. Oddly enough, I was talking about the security thereof. If people follow me on LinkedIn, I'll get a link up because the recording is still available. Pretty good. It was me and a couple of other analysts from our dedicated AI practice at Omdia. And we had some fabulous questions from the audience. So good stuff, a fun week, and one in which I was really happy to be at home rather than somewhere else.
I hear you. It's always good to be back home. I was just on vacation. It's always good to come back home to my bed. So I'm glad to be back home as well. Well, speaking of back home, we also want to welcome back to home here at Twyatt, of course, our very own Mr. Brian Chiebert. You always have fun and interesting gadgets to show. What do you got this week?
Well, actually, I'm finally testing negative from a horrible, horrible COVID variant. So that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the interns at the Central Florida Fair has decided he wants to learn IoT. So I think what I'm going to try and teach him how to do is use a Raspberry Pi to measure temperature and also shoot pictures so we can get occupancy of the trade show halls and also measure to see if the air conditioner really is pumping out cold air. And then in addition, I'm going to try and teach them how to harvest power usage from power meters over an RS-485 Modbus connection. So that ought to be interesting.
Very interesting. Always fun stuff. Always fun stuff. Well, speaking of interesting, we've had a really interesting week in the enterprise. In fact, we have an InfoPack show for you today because we're going to start by learning from Black Hat. Of course, Curtis is going to take us through that. Tons of stuff to discover there. Plus, if you're we're using some older programming languages in your applications and you need to maintain them. This article may be for you because we're going to talk about modern transpilation. That's right, converting off of that old language and how AI might be assisting things there. Plus, with the proliferation of AI usages in the market today, we have Michael Amori, CEO of Virtualytics. He's going to talk about how AI is actually impacting data access and analytics. So lots to talk about there. So definitely stick around. And remember, if this is your first time watching our show, definitely listen and watch and support the show by going to twit.tv/Twiat. And also, you can also join Club Twit as well if you haven't subscribed. That's an ad-free access to all of our podcasts, plus special events and Discord channels as well. And of course, you can join that by going to twit.tv/Club Twit. Definitely appreciate your support there. Now, this is a special show. So as we said before, we're going to have go over and hand it over to actually Curtis first to talk about Black Hat and DEF CON this year. Curtis?
Thanks, Lou. I appreciate it. Well, you know, we talk about Black Hat and DEF CON. It's worth reminding people that these are two separate events. They are produced by different companies. They were started by the same person, but have since become two separate entities. They just happen to take place in the same city, one right on the heels of another. And I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a significant overlap in the attendee base. So what was it this year? Well, as always, Black Hat is the more enterprise-facing show. It is where the enterprise defenders spend time. It is where people whose job it is to keep the bad guys out go to find out what their peers are doing. A lot of researchers. And it was interesting this year hearing attendees say that Black Hat is a very technical, hands-on kind of conference. And that's very true. While there are a lot of CISOs there, most of the presentations, most of the trainings, most of the sessions that look at research are from and for people who actually get their hands dirty in cybersecurity. Well, what were they talking about? It will surprise absolutely no one to hear that this year, the biggest single topic of conversation was generative AI. And the remarkable thing about AI is this. Last year, when we went to Black Hat, I heard several executives and CISOs say something a lot like, I never want to hear AI again. I'm sick of hearing about AI. There's nothing new. Everybody's got it. I just don't want to hear about it because it's just plain marketing speak. Fast forward a year, and everybody wants to talk about AI. All of the vendors are talking about either what they're doing in generative AI, what their plans are for generative AI, or what the reason is that they're going to wait a while before coming out with something in generative AI. It was the center of gravity around which all conversations orbited. I even have a colleague who at RSA invented a metric, MTTA, mean time to AI, which was a measure of how long we went in an interview before the first person brought up AI. And I think the average was something like 68 seconds this year. It was really, really short. What does it mean for security? Well, it's important to note that generative AI is different than the neural networks and other forms of, let's call it classic AI, that has been part of cybersecurity for a while. The big difference is this. The classic model AI, neural nets and the like, are very good at doing targeted tasks very quickly. They are very good at automating processes. If you want something that will respond to poorly understood threats in a very short period of time, something that uses heuristics, another AI-generated term or AI-adjacent term, you're talking AI, automation, speed, that sort of thing. Generative AI or large language model is really bad at that because the large model requires time to sort through. It requires time to process. It requires time to do the sort of massive correlations that are required to get answers. Where the large language models are being used is in human assist functions, mostly to do what I describe as taking a tier one analyst and turning them into a tier 1.5 analyst. It makes it so that as they pass things on to tier two and tier three analysts, it goes with more context, with more recommendations, with more certainty about what is being seen. So we have those two things going back and forth. Now, when we got to DEF CON, things shifted because DEF CON is traditionally the conference for the pen tester, the red team, the threat actor. And such was the case this year. But as we continue a trend that started several years ago, the executive branch of the federal government has recognized just how skilled many of these folks who go to DEF CON are. And so this year, for example, we had a mass generative AI red teaming event. They would get around 200 people at a time into a room filled with bright, shiny new laptops and individual codes that allowed people to record what they were doing as they threw prompts, as they threw lines of text, as they threw ersatz commands against the generative AI engines from Google, for ChatGPT, for all of the major generative AI engines. And this was sponsored by the White House. It was fascinating. It was one of a surreal moment when I was standing there. I attend DEF CON on a media badge. And I was standing there in this room watching all of the people hard at work. Standing next to me was the Secretary of Homeland Security. And on the other side of me were a couple of people from DARPA. Wandering around the room, there were people from the White House staff who were wearing big, round, glowy badges with the White House engraved on. You know, there's no trying to pass as anything, but we're here from the White House. But, you know, there were people from the Department of State talking about bounty programs against hackers. There were people from DARPA. There were people from all over there. So that was going on. And, oh, by the way, just like AI had been something we didn't talk about at Black Hat last year, at DEF CON, the AI village last year was very sleepy. It shared a room with two other villages, and the biggest conference session I saw had about 20 people sitting in it. This year, you would have thought they were handing out free Taylor Swift tickets. Judging by the crowd, there were literally hundreds of people standing in line to get into every session that was held in the AI village. So what, beside from AI, what were people talking about? People talked about risk. We heard about risk-based this, that, and the other. And typically, what this means is that companies are using a risk metric. So they're quantifying the risk, taking risk, measuring it, and expressing it in some sort of quantity. And then using whatever product it is they're selling or service to reduce that risk by a quantifiable amount. So that's what their goal, their metric. They're not really worried about stopping people, stopping attackers. Stopping attackers is a means to an end. The end is reducing risk. They are risk-based. Going along with that, tools for measuring risk are all over the place. If we have a problem, to be honest, it's that we have so very many ways of expressing risk, and it's very difficult for companies to compare their risk against that of another, pardon me, organization, which makes it very difficult to benchmark your risk against someone else. So risk. So AI. We talked about things like IoT security, or the current expression that's being used more and more is OT. Instead of Internet of Things, we're talking about operational technology. OT versus IT. Operational technology versus information technology. And how the vast amounts of data that are generated in those OT sensors and controllers can be analyzed and understood by the IT group, and some sort of coherent enterprise-wide risk posture arrived at. There is, of course, a lot else, but these were the major threads that I came across. It was exciting. The energy at both shows was incredible. A lot of people talking about how happy they were to be there with all of the attendees, sharing ideas, seeing people face to face, and making the online interactions that will occur the rest of the year much more valuable because they've had the human interaction at the trade show.
So Curtis, before we close up, I want to really know what was the most interesting, maybe your favorite part of Blackout, other than running into our very own digital Jesuit Padre SJ. What kind of hit your fancy there?
I have to say that my favorite thing, aside from, I have to give a, blatant plug, the Omdia Analyst Summit was great. We were sold out. It was standing room only, and we got to talk to a lot of people there. My favorite thing going through was hitting the startup section and looking at what these small startup companies are doing, often attacking a very particular piece of the puzzle, but doing it with an incredible focus. Now, we saw a lot of people using AI, which I think speaks to the democratization of AI that comes from being able to make use of some of the big, the ChatGPT, the Google, the various other public AI engines. And the way that they were bringing various forms of OT under the IT umbrella Lots of that going on as well. So lots of risk-based, lots of artificial intelligence, and lurking around all of it was training. I mean, we're still sitting on a shortage of somewhere around 500,000 trained professionals globally. We know there's no way to bridge that gap anytime soon, but the need is out there. And so when I talk to young people about, you know, well, what kind of career should I think about in computers? Look at security. There's a crying need. It's really interesting. The people are great. And, oh, by the way, pays pretty darn well.
It does indeed. Does indeed. Well, thank you, Chris. Great, great summary. I'm actually interested to see where all of this goes in the coming months, just to see how organizations actually react to some of the news that came out of it. So I appreciate the summary.
Yeah, it's fun.
My pleasure. You know,
it's nice that the White House is doing stuff, because back in when I first went to DEF CON, the top game was spot the Fed. And I didn't get spotted till like the last day.
Yeah, the big glowy badges take a lot of challenge out of that one.
Yeah. I just want to add a little bit, because being, you know, coming from academia, to the kids that are listening or people thinking about getting into cybersecurity, just a heads up, there's no shortcuts. Cybersecurity requires almost to the letter that you know the systems well. So I know, I've been getting a lot of people asking about, what career should I go into. Cybersecurity, I keep telling them, is a superset of the computer industry, because a lot of the vulnerabilities are in pieces of the industry that you have to know reasonably well. And the black hat teams and the white hat teams know that. So it's not a shortcut. Do your homework. Learn about things. Remember, this industry, you never stop learning.
That's right. That's right. Thank you, guys. Well, next up, we have another bite, and we're going to talk about programming languages and actually converting some of your old applications from some of those old languages. But before we do have to thank a really great sponsor of this week's Enterprise Tech, and that's Miro. Quick question. Are you and your team still going from tab to tab, tool to tool, losing those brilliant ideas and important information along the way? With Miro, that doesn't need to happen anymore. That's right. Miro is a collaborative visual platform that brings all of your great work together, no matter where you are, whether you're working from home or in the hybrid workplace, or everything comes together in one workspace, and that is online. Now, at first glance, it might seem like just a simple digital whiteboard, but Miro's capabilities run far beyond that. It's a visual collaboration tool packed with a ton of features for the whole team to build on each other's ideas, and they help build the future. Plus, you can shorten your time to launch so your customers get what they need even faster. With Miro, you need only one tool so your vision can come to life. Planning, researching, brainstorming, and designing and feedback cycles all happen in one tool. It can happen live on the Miro board across teams. And faster inputs mean faster outcomes. In fact, Miro users report the tool increasing productivity delivery and project delivery speeds by 29%. That's huge. View and share the big picture overview in just a cinch. When everyone has a voice and everyone can tap into a single source of truth, your team remains engaged, they remain invested, and most importantly, happy. Cut out any confusion on who needs to do what by mapping out processes, roles, and timelines. You can do that with several templates, including Miro's swim lane diagram. Strategic planning becomes easier when it's visual and accessible. Tap into a way to map processes, systems, and plans with the whole team so that they only view it, but have a chance to actually give feedback as well. And if you're feeling meeting fatigue, I know I am. Miro users report saving up to 80 hours per user per year just from streamlining conversations and feedback. Ready to be part of the 1 million users who join Miro every month? Get your first 3 boards for free to start working better together at Miro.com/podcast. That's Miro.com/podcast. And we thank Miro for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the bites. Now, many of you may remember, even still use the COBOL programming language. That's right, COBOL, 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 C-O-B-O-L, Cobalt's actually celebrated its 60th anniversary back in 2019. And in 1959, it quickly became the go-to programming language around the world. It was designed with business in mind. In fact, it even means common business-oriented language. And it's unlike any other language at the time because it was portable and actually human-readable. Now, you fast forward to today, and many folks now working full-time actually want to modernize their applications written in it and their pipelines to make development happen more quickly and recompile those programs with the modern, faster versions of the compilers for it. Well, this week, we want to spotlight IBM's groundbreaking code assistance for IBM Z, a tool designed to actually translate COBOL code into Java using a sophisticated AI model. The move actually addresses the significant challenge here. It's a huge challenge for organizations that face the fact that they have applications written in it, but there's high migration costs there. As context, a 2022 survey actually revealed that over 800 billion lines of code are actually still written in it and still exist in current production systems. Now, IBM's Code Assistant is actually operational on-premise or in the cloud and is powered by CodeNet, which is actually can comprehend this code, and it can comprehend Java and nearly 80 other programming languages as well. So it's pretty cool. IBM highlights its advanced AI capabilities by emphasizing its role to facilitating a natural transition for COBOL to enterprise Java with supporting the entire application modernization process. Now, here's the interesting part. The tool isn't without potential pitfalls. That's right. A recent study from Stanford actually suggests possible vulnerabilities in the AI-generated code. Consequently, IBM actually recommends thorough review by human experts to actually ensure the code's security. And strategically, IBM is banking on tools like Code Assistance for its future trajectory, noting that 84% of its mainframe clientele currently still use COBOL. Now, the company is keen on leading the next wave of AI-powered code generation tools. I guarantee that they want to get into that space and keep in that space, hoping to rival platforms like, of course, GitHub, Copilot, and Amazon's Code Whisperer. Now, as we witness the fusion of traditional processes and systems with AI, it's clear that innovation, adaptability, and careful vetting are truly paramount as part of the process. Now, I want to bring my co-host back in because, of course, I wanted you guys to reminisce about the golden age of this language. And what strikes you as maybe the most contrasting or significant contrast between its legacy and some of the emerging IT landscape that's out here, especially maybe AI integrated solutions? What do you guys think? Is there time to get off of COBOL?
Well, I'll tell you, COBOL's reach was staggering. I actually have a chunk of wire about yay long that I got from Grace Hopper, who was a very significant contributor to COBOL. In fact, COBOL was one of the first compiled languages made available. Now, I'm going to show my age. I did a lot of COBOL. I still get consulted on by different people. And a lot of my classmates are saying they're making more during COBOL consulting after they retired than they did during their career. Now, having said that, COBOL is not the only thing around that needs this service. The touch also needs to be around for RPG, report program generator, which, you know, ruled the roost. Almost all the major reports at banks were in RPG for a very long time. Anyway, COBOL's great. I love the fact that they're using AI to get some of the conversion going, but all the feedback I've gotten from classmates and other colleagues that still touch COBOL is that the code generated by this is lacking. So they're not going to be out of a job anytime soon. There's going to be a lot of work to fix the COBOL. Now, the nice thing is because COBOL is still very procedural and almost hierarchical in how it flows, fixing isn't as hard as it sounds. You know, it's not like a triggered language like Java. Of course, I've got a bone to pick about Java because those runtimes I keep stumbling over the different runtime versions. So I'm not sure Java was the best choice. Personally, I would have rather seen it go into something like C Sharp.
Yeah.
But, absolutely. Fine Java, you know, it's reasonably portable, but it needs a lot of work. And, I think I give kudos to IBM that needed to happen because, my fellow programmers that know COBOL were dying off.
Right. There's a lot of legacy application languages out there that organizations use. And it's obviously evident that COBOL is a backbone for a lot of enterprise. And it still is, given the fact that we see the resurgence of it by this survey that's coming out. Curtis, what do you think? Obviously, there's a lot of challenges and triumphs that happened from using COBOL in the past. Do you believe some of those, once it's converted, some of those lessons are useful in modern business of handling some of those, you know, legacy technologies back then?
To me, the issue with COBOL is almost always going to be the device drivers. You know, the COBOL, and people talk about the legacy code that's out there. There is, let's admit it, you know, an entire library worth of legacy code sitting out there, much of it running on IBM mainframes. And the question is, how does it get data to and from storage devices? How does it gather data from various retail systems? You know, let's not forget that mainframes, the reason that mainframes still exist is that they are monster transaction processing machines. They are just monster IO engines. And I keep hearing people say, oh, well, a cluster of PCs will do exactly what a mainframe will do. Yeah, if you want to spend more than the mainframe on a big, giant cluster of PCs, sure. But to get back to the question, I think that there are a lot of processes that were essentially locked into place by COBOL programs. And COBOL was really good for that because it is human readable. You know, you could have a process expert talk to a programmer and the programmer could almost write down what the process expert said and send it to the compiler and a, you know, working code would pop out. I agree with Brian. I think that of all the languages that exist, converting COBOL to Java is low on the makes sense totem pole. I think I know why it's being done. It's to deal with the computer science grads of the last 10 or 15 years where Java is one of maybe two languages that they had to learn before they graduated. But, you know, it makes about as much sense as saying we're going to build something to convert COBOL to Lisp or to APL or to, you know, something else along those lines. It all, though, reminds us that the most expensive part of most development efforts these days is the human time. Systems are much less expensive than FTEs. For those who don't speak HR, an FTE is a full-time equivalent. That's one full-time employee. FTEs are really expensive. CPU cycles are really cheap. So if you can build something that, you know, uses CPU cycles to convert rather than having a human do it all, it's a win. I just think this is a win in a battle that may not need to have been fought.
I'd like to add one more thing. IBM mainframes have been around for a really, really long time and are worldwide. In fact, they were popular enough that they had clones by Amdahl and Fujitsu. I used to work for Fujitsu specifically to support the IBM 370 clone. Now, one of the advantages to that is the I/O and storage were all handled by CICS, which is Transaction Processing System. And what's nice about it is you modified CICS, and that's how we got the Japanese versions that I worked with at Fujitsu. But it was also translated into Portuguese, Spanish, you name it. I've worked on Fujitsu mainframes in South America. So yeah, they are not going away anytime soon. They've been around, and COBOL was what drove a lot of the sales of these mainframes. Anyway, just had to throw that in.
I want to also add really quick, and then we'll move on because we want to get to the guests. But I think Curtis brings out a good point here is, you know, being an engineer who's actually helped write a transpiler that goes from one language to the next to get people off of potentially older technology is a tough thing to do, especially trying to build in all the semantics and conversions and, you know, understanding the construct differences and all that stuff. It's very complex, which is interesting that IBM is trying to do this. Hopefully it's profitable for them and keeps people on IBMs. Because again, you know, integrating AI is also not cheap as for IBM, that is, to help train these models on how to do it. So I'm interested to see where this goes because it's actually a tough challenge. Well, folks, that does it for the Bytes. Next up, we have our guests. But before we get to our guests, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech. And that's Collide. It's a device trust solution for companies with Okta. And they ensure that if a device isn't trusted and secure, you can actually log onto your cloud apps. If you work in security or IT and company has Okta, you should listen very closely. Have you noticed that in the past few years, the majority of data breaches and hacks you read about have something in common? That's right. It's employees. That's right. Sometimes an employee's device get hacked because of unpatched software or an OS patch. Sometimes an employee leaves sensitive data in an unsecured place. And it seems like every day a hacker breaks into or breaches and uses credentials they fished from an employee. The problem here isn't your end users. It's the solutions that are supposed to prevent these breaches, right? But it doesn't have to be this way. Imagine a world where only secure devices can access your cloud apps. In this world, phished credentials are useless to hackers, and you can manage every OS, including Linux, all from a single dashboard. But best of all, you can get employees to fix their own device security issues without creating more work for your IT teams. Even better. The good news is you don't have to imagine this world. You can just start using Collide. Visit collide.com/twiet to book an on-demand demo today and see how it works for yourself. That's KOLIDE.com/twiet. And we thank Collide for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the twiet, right? Today we have Michael Amori. He's CEO of Virtualytics. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Now, our audience is a huge spectrum of experiences, that whether it's the entry-level person all the way up to CISOs, CTOs, and CEOs, and some of them love to actually hear people's origin stories. So can you take us through a journey through tech and what brought you to Virtualytics?
Yeah, sure. So I was I had a background in physics and then ended up working on Wall Street for many years, so 15 years in finance, so seemingly very unrelated field. But as part of that job, for the last part of my job, I was in charge of a team of data scientists using a lot of data science techniques to understand what was going on in the markets. That's what our trading desk did. And then just at a Caltech alumni event, by chance, I met a professor at Caltech, actually an astronomer, who was working on very complex, huge data sets. And was using new techniques to analyze the data from these data sets. So he was using the combination of AI to help you find the key patterns to focus in on in the data, combined with 3D visualizations of those insights so that the human could really understand what was going on in data much faster than with normal techniques. I was really fascinated by that. I saw how that could really be used by someone like me and probably by many others in the world. And so I decided to quit my job and started the company to try to bring this technology to a lot of enterprises and to the government.
Amazing. Now, we've been talking a lot about AI. And of course, in a recent survey, Deloitte actually said that 67% of executives struggle with data access and use analytics. What do you perceive the evolution of AI actually helping to bridge that gap here?
Yeah. So I think, and Kurt was also talking about it earlier, about the fact that there aren't that as many trained people as you need right now. There's a shortage of the talent needed. I think AI, if executed properly, can bring to the human, who does not need to be necessarily a coder or a mathematician, can bring to the human an additional amount of knowledge that enables the human to make better decisions. And so the key is for the AI to do it in a simple enough way so that people without the training can actually understand what's going on. And that's really the challenge. And that's the challenge that we are set on at Virtualytics.
So when I talk to a lot of organizations, a lot of them are saying, okay, I want to get involved with AI. I want to be able to feed this data, train this data, and then produce some really good analytics and insights out of it. Unfortunately, I just don't know how to prepare myself for it. What are some really good ways for organizations to prepare themselves to benefit from some of the AI advancements you're talking about?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the analytics pipeline, you always have the data exploration phase. Okay, so that's the part where you're faced with a data set and you kind of got to understand the gist of what's going on so that you can then understand what path should I follow after that. Now, that data exploration phase is not well served right now with the tools that are available. So you need to have really specialized, trained people who know how to do data exploration in a sophisticated way to really know what's the best next step. That's where you need AI tools that can do the data exploration phase. At Virtualytics, we call it the intelligent exploration part, that can enable you to really understand what are the main things going on in your data set before you even move on and think of anything else.
So it's interesting you said that, because a lot of, I'm actually reading other stats here that says less than a third of firms actually identify as being data driven. And they, even though they want to really heavily invest in AI and analytics, do you feel like companies need to do something else to shift their focus here, to change their narrative in order to get there? Because it sounds like this tool being able to actually help them get their data ready is part of that.
That's right. So I think there are two big stumbling blocks. So let me just be precise. The first part is the data prep. So like the data wrangling, that part takes people a long time. And that part just is very time intensive. But then you have the data exploration part, which is also very difficult in a different way, in the sense that people don't approach it in a way that allows them to let the data tell them what's really going on in the data. So in that sense, Lou, in that sense, many organizations end up not being data driven because they're not doing the data exploration full justice. They're not going all the way in the data exploration part. So now they're leaving behind all the pearls, all the nuggets that are in the data. They're leaving those behind.
Now, I've actually recently talked to Adion, an organization that does this pipeline for pharmaceutical companies around some of the data that comes out of their trials and so on. And getting data ready from the trial data and of course, ingesting other streams of other data streams like social networks and people's history is a really hard, cleansing that data and getting it ready for these models is a very hard thing. And it sounds like they could use something like this to help get their data ready. What's the guarantee that organizations, once they pipe their data through these models, that the data that comes out the other side isn't missing some of the fidelity that they're hoping that they need for it?
Right. So I think that's where you have to, first of all, have AI output clear explanation. We call explainable AI, explaining why the AI thinks that what it found is important, so that you as a human are not just asked to just move on blindly without understanding why this is potentially important. That's really key. So that way, you as a human can look at what the AI found and you can see, oh, it's important because of this, this and that. Okay, that makes sense to me. And now it passes the common sense test. I can move on to the next step. That's a key part of what you need to do, I think.
So I want to get a little bit on to, AI and the fact that there's obviously always privacy, ethical situations and biases that come along with AI. It seems to be a hot button topic, I guess, these days, especially when you're talking about making data-driven decisions based off of data. How do you think or envision the concept of responsible AI here? Like what can organizations do to ensure they're adopting in that matter?
Yeah. So I think when it comes to responsible or ethical use of AI, there are various dimensions to it. One of them, as you said, is to make sure that privacy and security are dealt with. And obviously for that, there are many different things that need to be done for that. For example, for our platform, we don't actually get to see the client data. Ours is just a tool that the company can then use to do its own analysis without us being privy to the data. But the other part, and this goes back to what we were talking about just a minute ago, you need to make sure that the AI explains why it is that you should believe something before you move on to the next thing. Because, you know, imagine when you're dealing with really important decisions, like Kurt, you know, you were talking about the government being involved. We work a lot with the government. You don't want certain like major key decisions to just be a black box. They need to be explained, and that's kind of the ethical part of AI, right? Otherwise, you know, you're letting a machine make decisions that could imply life or death, or could imply major consequences. And so I think that's part of it, is just making sure that everything is really explainable, understandable for the human.
We have a lot more to talk about, especially the future landscape of AI as part of business. And I do want to bring my co-host back in. But before we do want to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Panoptica. Now, in the rapid evolving landscape of cloud security, Cisco Panoptica is at the forefront, revolutionizing the way you manage your microservices and workloads. With a unified and simplified approach to managing the security of cloud-native applications over the entire lifecycle, Panoptica simplifies cloud-native security by reducing tools, vendors, and complexity. By meticulously evaluating them for security threats and vulnerabilities, Panoptica ensures your applications remain secure and resilient. Panoptica detects security vulnerabilities on the go in development, testing, and production environments, including any exploits in open source software. It also protects against known vulnerabilities in container images and configuration drift, all while providing runtime policy-based remediation. As Cisco's comprehensive cloud application security solution, Panoptica ensures seamless scalability across clusters and multi-cloud environments. It also offers a unified view through a simplified dashboard experience, reducing operational complexity and fostering collaboration among developers, SREs, and SecOps teams. Take charge of your cloud security and address security issues across your application stack faster and with precision. Embrace Panoptica as your trusted partner in securing APIs, serverless functions, containers, and Kubernetes environments, allowing you to transform the way you protect your valuable assets. Learn more about Panoptica at panoptica.app. And we thank Panoptica for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Michael Amore, CEO of Virtualytics, about the proliferation of AI in the market and how it's impacting data access and analytics. But I want to bring my co-host back in because they've been chomping at the bit here. They want to talk about some stuff here. Curtis, do you want to go first?
Why, sure. And Michael, one of the things that I've been trying to be clear about in the conversations I've had and would like to talk to you about is when you say AI, what kind of AI are we talking about? Are you using the sort of, you know, generative AI large language model that we're hearing so much about in products like ChatGPT, or are you using a different type of engine for the AI in your service?
Yeah. So we're using supervised and unsupervised learning, both types of techniques. And then we are not using large language models for the moment. However, our AI is generating the data visualization. So in that sense, it is generative AI. So what happens is, let me give you an example. You are an analyst, you're using our platform. You type in natural language, you say, what's going on with sales? The AI takes the data set that you have uploaded related to sales and finds what are the key insights, and then generates a bunch of visualizations with explanations in natural language that tell you what is the significance of those visualizations. So the visualizations were generated by the AI. The explanations in plain English were generated by the AI.
All right. And with the training, because training is where a lot of potentially very useful models run aground. Is this one where you are doing supervised and unsupervised pre-training for a customer, or are the customers also involved in training the models that will be used for their specific application?
Great question. So we have both. So we have certain preset models that are very robust that we have tailored so that they can run basically on any kind of data, and they have been tested to be able to do that. And those are kind of the out-of-the-box self-service things that can provide the insights and generate the visualizations. But on top of that, the customer has the ability to deploy their own models onto the platform and then take advantage of all the visualizations and analytical capabilities that are on the platform. So you can do both. Prepackaged algorithms and the client's own algorithms can be deployed on the platform.
Now, I know that one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that the sort of in the news AI engines that we're hearing about can take some truly massive computing horsepower to make run. It sounds like in this case, your customers don't have to invest in massive server farms. They're not going to be people who are making the GPU vendors happy because they have to buy, 50,000 GPUs in order to make this work. Is it all happening via a browser interface back to you, or are they doing it through APIs? How do people connect from their business to yours in order to take advantage of this information?
They connect through a browser interface. So we're cloud-based, and we have optimized the kind of basic algorithms. And but when I say basic, they're pretty sophisticated, and they can really get you to 80% of the way in understanding a data set. And those can run very efficiently through a browser interface. Then if you need to go the remaining 20%, that's where we can then add some workflows on top of our platform that integrate with our platform that can take advantage of big data capabilities and then can allow the client to deploy their own customized models on top of the platform. But the way I would describe the platform is it can provide the foundation for really doing this intelligent exploration of the data, figuring out what's going on, what's the big picture in my data. That's kind of the first necessary step that very often is missed by a lot of people.
Well, this is actually starting to sound different. We've been hearing a lot of different people saying they have AI and they're going to make workflows better and things like that. But a lot of the people we've been talking to are targeting more for the DevOps environment. You guys are, I'm starting to hear something more like an assistant that's going to sit by the subject matter expert's elbow. Like having a DevOps person dedicated to the subject matter expert, which we can't afford to fund anymore. So do you guys really look that different? Is that your target?
I think you're right. I mean, we see ourselves as augmenting what the analyst does in a very profound way. And we see ourselves as empowering the analyst to explore and understand the data in a completely different way. If I can say just one more thing real quickly, one of the things, for example, that we do that is part of the automatically generated visualizations that help people understand the data, one example of that is the AI embedded in our platform can take tabular data, so regular data, and turn it into a network and represent that data as a network without the client having to connect to a graph database. And we can then show all the connections between the data points in a very novel way that opens up your understanding of the data. So absolutely what you said, that's what we're trying to do. We want to be, we want to assist the human, the analyst, in a completely new way.
So why don't we just kind of step back a little bit? You've got some different types of tools. I think one of them is called Snowflake and so forth.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, one of my biggest complaints when I was working at the university was my PhD saying, how do you graph this? How do you graph that? Why don't we back up a little bit and let's go and look at, you know, talk about some of the tools that you folks have and what can they do for these subject matter experts?
Sure. So one of the tools that we have, which is the one I was describing earlier, and by the way, we can connect to Snowflake databases and pull in the data from there. But one of the tools that we have is called Network Extractor. So this is where, let's say that you're a finance company and you're interested in understanding what drives credit card defaults. And you have data on thousands of people who have taken out credit cards. And for each one of these people, you have hundreds of features, of metrics that you've measured on these people. And you want to understand, why are some people more likely to default than others? What you can do is you can take that data set, put it through the network extractor, turn it into a network representation, then have the AI show you all the different communities of people. So all the people who are similar to each other in the most important ways, and then see if certain communities are more likely to default than others. And you'll be surprised if you, when you look at data this way, you see connections that otherwise would not be apparent at all. So that's an example of a tool that we have. Another tool that we have is called Smart Mapping, where you tell the software what you're interested in understanding. Let's say in my example, it's credit card default. You input all the data, the AI tells you what are the most important features driving credit card default. And then the AI suggests ways to visualize those most important features, so you understand exactly how they work. So these are some of the examples, and these are all readily accessible to anyone without having to have a PhD in math.
Cool. So I'm a department manager in a small to medium-sized corporation, and I'm just frustrated. The IT group's just not very responsive. I can't afford to throw gobs of money at them. And I'd like to go and take a look at your solutions. What kinds of homework should I do to get prepped so that we don't go and waste your people's time to get started?
So I think one thing that you can do is you can go on Gartner, you know, the consultants. Gartner, probably one of the top enterprise consultants. We made 8 of the Gartner hype cycles for 2023, including emerging tech for the enterprise and data and analytics. You can see what the analysts wrote about our software. So they did a deep dive in what we do, and you can see if this sounds like it's a good fit for you. And this is written by a third party, not by us. Not it's not on our website. So this is something, you know, get an independent entity tell you what they think about our software. And then also obviously on our website, we have a bunch of white papers that explain different use cases, different customer examples, etc. And then from there, you can see if there's potentially a good fit.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you so much for being here. Unfortunately, time flies when you're having fun. Lots of great topics and information here, so we appreciate you being here. And so, since we're running low on time, can you maybe tell the folks at home a little bit more about where they can learn more about Virtualytics, what's going on, what's coming up for you guys?
Sure. And thank you for having me again. So you can learn a lot more about Virtualytics on our website, virtualytics.com. I think you will find that our technology is very different. It's revolutionary, and it's really starting to have an impact in the enterprise world and in government. So thank you again, guys.
Thank you. Well, folks, you have done it again. You sat through another hour of the Best Thing Enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to TWI. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to our very own co-host. I want to start with our very own Mr. Brian Chee. Cheeber, thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you? Maybe what's going on for you this week?
This week I am catching up on yard work. You know, basically a month and a half of being laid low by this COVID variant. My yard's a little overgrown, so I'm doing yard work. But I am complaining about different things. And, you know, I'm actually working on some projects to try and see if we can increase the usability of the Central Florida Fairgrounds. And I'm doing a lot of that on Twitter at ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. If you folks have ideas for shows, you can hit me on Twitter. You can also throw email directly at me. I am Cheebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv. You're also welcome to use twiet at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your show ideas. Take care, everyone.
Thank you, Cheebert. We also have to thank our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, thank you again for being here. Where can people find you, all your work? What's going on for you the coming week?
Well, this coming week, I'm going to be heads down writing. As I said, I've got a report that is going in, but I'm going to take time out from doing that. I'll have a piece up on dark reading later on this week. That's dark reading / Omnia. When that happens, I will do an excerpt, point people to it from LinkedIn. You can follow me at Curtis Franklin. I will probably post to it on X or, you know, whatever it is this week. The social network formerly known as Twitter, where I am at KG4GWA, Mastodon, KG4GWA at mastodon.sdf.org, all sorts of other places. Look me up, send me a note. Love to hear from you. Would love to know what you think is important when it comes to the world of enterprise security management. Your thoughts are important. Would love to hear from you. And in the meantime, have a great day. Stay safe out there. The internet can be a dicey, dicey neighborhood.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, I also want to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen to catch up your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/twi. There it is. Get the amazing back episodes that we have. Of course, all the notes of the show, the guests, and of course, the co-host. But of course, right there next to those videos, you get those helpful subscribe and download link. Support the show by getting your audio version or video version of your choice on any one of your devices as well, because we're on all of those podcast applications. So definitely subscribe and support the show, because that's how we keep doing it. And of course, if you want to also support the show, you may have also heard that's we also have Club Twit. That's right. We talked about it before. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service, and it has a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. They also have Twit Plus Club events as well. It's only $7 a month. Gives you access to all of our shows ad-free. Plus, they also have a members-only Discord server as well, and they've just revamped it. It's awesome. It's beautiful. Has lots of great channels in there. Really, really well orchestrated in there. So definitely check it out. A lot of fun to be in there. So check out Club Twit by going to twit.tv/Club Twit. Also, you might have also heard Club Twit offers corporate group plans as well. That's right. It's a great way to give your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. The plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month. You get as many seats as you like. And this is really a great way for your IT departments, your sales teams, your support engineers, whoever, to get access to all of our podcasts. And of course, just like regular memberships, they can join the Twit Discord server as well and get those bonus plus feeds as well. Plus, get this, you also have family plans as well. That's right. It's a really great way. It's a $12 a month. You get 2 seats with that. And of course, just $6 each additional seat. They get all the advantages of the single plan as well. So lots of options. Definitely support Twit. Support the show by getting Club Twit at twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, I want you to impress your family members, your coworkers, your your friends, whoever, with the gift of Twiat, because we love doing this show. And the really great way to support the show is to also get them to subscribe as well, because we also talk about a lot of fun tech topics on the show, and I guarantee they will find it fun and interesting as well. Now, if you've already subscribed, we do this show live. That's right. It's live right now. And you can go to live.twit.tv at 1:30 p.m. Pacific every week on Fridays, and we do the show live. You come see how the pizza's made, all the banter behind the scenes, all the fun stuff before and after the show. You can watch it there at live.twit.tv. Of course, if you want to also watch it live, but also be part of the conversation, you can also jump into our infamous IRC channel as well, that Twit Live channel. You can check that out by just going in your browser to irc.twit.tv and jump in there right away. We love our chat room. They give us great topics each and every week, great show titles. Everything is really fun in there. So definitely check that out if you're going to watch the show live. I want you to also hit me up, contact me, wherever, whatever you want to do, have conversations about the show topics, maybe future topics, future guests. Of course, maybe even just talk about how to get started in tech. I love having that conversation as well. You can hit me up on twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my greatest enterprise and tidbits. And of course, I'm also LouMPM over at thethreads.net, of course. And of course, over on Mastodon, I'm LouMM at twit.social. So definitely direct message me each one of those. Of course, I'm also on LinkedIn, Louis Maresca on there. I get a lot more messages there than anywhere else. So definitely check me out there as well. I want to also, if you want to know what's going on during my normal work week, what I do here at Microsoft, you can check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post the latest and greatest ways for you to customize your office experience and make it more productive for you. And you may have also heard Python is now on Excel. That's right. Check that out, because that lets you write Python code to analyze your data within Excel. Right now it's in preview. So definitely check it out. See how it can work for you. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and to Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. Of course, I also want to thank all the engineers and staff at Twit, because they, of course, we couldn't do the show without them. And of course, I want to also thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time, because he's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. That's right. He does all the bookings for the show and all the plannings for the show, of course, each and every week. And we really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Chibert, for all your support. I want to also thank the editor for today, because they're going to make us look good after the fact to get rid of all of my mistakes. Thank you very much. Of course, thank you to our TD for today, our technical director, Mr. Victor. Victor, always great to have you here, sir. And what's going on this week in Twit?
Thanks for that. I just wanted to say, this weekend, if you're in the Petaluma area, Ant will be in downtown Petaluma, close to the old brick house, doing a photo walk. And
fun.
I might be there. So looking forward to hearing from Ant how to do street photography without being a creep.
That's always good. You definitely don't want to be a creep.
Yeah. But it looks fun. I've always been scared to do street photography because of that. But I think it'd be cool.
Wish I was there. Thanks, Victor. Well, folks, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here. In case you hadn't heard, Home Theater Geeks is back. Each week, I bring you the latest audio video news, tips and tricks to get the most out of your AV system, product reviews, and more. You can enjoy Home Theater Geeks only if you're a member of Club Twit, which costs $7 a month, or you can subscribe to Home Theater Geeks by itself for only $2.99 a month. I hope you'll join me for a weekly dose of Home Theater Geekitude.